Crazy games we play, crazy things we say. We fight for control, whether it's right or wrong. The truth is not enough.
Morning, this is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene. And today we're going to be talking about narrative control and authority. Or as Saul likes to say, authorita.
Authorita. So narrative control is kind of a newer idea in role-playing games, within the last 10 years, and probably a little bit less than that. So what is that narrative control? My definition, so we have to define these terms so people know what we're talking about. So my definition of narrative control is when players of an RPG are able to add elements to an RPG session. So this could be as simple as adding an item in the game. Like, for example, if you're like in a warehouse, you can add a forklift that you can hide behind or even jump into and drive through the warehouse doors in.
What if there's not supposed to be a forklift there?
Well, that's what narrative control does. It gives you the ability to add elements to the game. I think it's a little bit freeing for the GM and the players, because I disagree on the GM part.
I think it's less freeing for the GM and more, I have to think of stuff real quick.
Well, we'll get to that later. But that's the thing about narrative control. You can add elements to the role-playing game session that's not started by the or put out by the GM. For example, you could talk about a player could add an NPC character and have a conversation with the NPC character, like, oh, I need information from about the dead person, so I'm going to go to the coroner's office and I'm going to talk to her, and she's going to give me the report. Right now, if you're a cop or something, or you play a cop, that would be fine. But let's say you're just a regular schmo, so maybe you can do that. Maybe the GM will allow you to add a coroner, to the game. But they might make you roll a dice to figure out if you could actually talk your way of getting that report from the coroner. If the GM deems it that it's not going to be an easy thing, or
I think that you need to back up a little bit and explain how old-style D&D games, the GM was always in control. The Dungeon Master was
okay.
Created
well, was just,
the world
I was
and
just
stuff.
Defining narrative control. So you're right. In original D&D, this did not happen at all. But then, D&D was an offshoot of a miniature game. And, we've talked about original D&D before. I played original D&D, and it was, For all intents and purposes, there was a lot of dungeons in this Dungeons & Dragons game. There was, people went into the dungeon, kicked down doors, killed monsters, and took their stuff. There wasn't much narrative control to be had. And the GM was the one that told everything about the world. He was the one who, or she, was the one in charge of disseminating all this information to the players.
I agree.
Right.
So that was the old D&D.
And a lot of games followed that pattern. I mean, I played Space Opera, and I played many games, and they never talked about player narrative control, right?
Shadowrun.
The narrative control was, the player's narrative control was playing their character. The character had complete control of their own character, and they were able to do things with that character, but they never were able, the idea of adding things to a scene, what did they call it when you put it in paper? You put it down on paper. It was never...
I don't know what you're trying to say, but...
Yes.
Having played mostly old-style D&D games,
right,
and those kind of games, I don't think there's anything wrong with the player having narrative control over their character and adding things to the scene. You do that all the time when we play. You give the situation and you allow the characters to of course they control themselves,
right,
but they don't really control the world that they're in for the most part in a D&D game.
Right, that's what we're talking about.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
That they have no narrative control.
They do have narrative control over themselves and what they do.
Well, that's not much narrative control. Narrative control is being able to add more than what the game master has put out there. Like, let's say he puts out, like I said, the warehouse, and it's full of a bunch of crates. And let's say you're actually using a map, using a play mat, and you mark down, where your characters are using figures. Or here's boxes, here's pallets of stuff. And then, you know, and then you by saying, well, since this is a warehouse, does it have to be a forklift? So I'll put, let's say there's a forklift here. This is a good spot for a forklift as a player. And then the GM goes, oh, okay, that's good. You know?
Yes. So that's like a feng shui kind of thing.
Right. Right.
So the newer games give the player
even more narrative control.
This idea that they're in charge of part of the world.
Yeah. Well.
Or they can give you ideas about what's going on during the game.
Correct.
Versus you giving them ideas about what's going on during the game.
Right, right. Now, we've never really played a narrative, more games that have a lot of narrative control.
Are.
Like Fiasco is a famous game of heist gone wrong, basically. And there's different, they call them, they're kind of like outlines of what is going to go on in the game. You know, they give an outline of or a situation, and the players play roles in that situation. But what happens is basically it's like, you know, kind of like I have the talking stick. And when you have the talking stick, you could talk and add whatever you want to the situation. Then you pass that talking stick, you know, and in this case, there's no talking stick in Fiasco.
I understand.
But that's what you're doing is that you pass
around the circle.
You pass this ability to talk or tell a story to the next person. And you all build a story, a shared story, by doing this kind of a way of doing things.
So I'll tell you right now, I've never played Fiasco.
No, we never played Fiasco.
Or any game where all the players are literally in charge of what is happening. And I'm not sure I'm real comfortable with that, because what if I don't like what somebody says?
Then you just got to deal with it. That's just the way it works, I guess. I mean, you know, so because, you know, we lack a little bit of experience in that sense of playing Fiasco. You know, there's another game called The Quiet Year, right, which has to do with this post-apocalyptic world where you are a group of people who are, you know, ensconced somewhere, and you've been dealing with people attacking you and raiding you. And The Quiet Year is exactly that. The Quiet Year is they're not raiding you, you're not being attacked, so you have one quiet year to do whatever you want to do, whether it's to repair your keep or fortress, wherever you're at, to farm more, cut more wood or whatever. So that is, you know, and then you go from there. So it's weird. And like I said, I never played it. Of course, my friend Bay, experimental guy, goes out there and gets this game. I think he's even ran it somewhere at a convention, probably Big Bad Con, since Big Bad Con is one of those type of conventions here in Northern California that exclusively seems to play a lot of independent games. And those are the kind of games they play, these really new, small, independent type games that people really love role-playing in.
That's R-O-L-E.
Yes, the capital R-O-L-E, playing.
So, basically, narrative control boils down to if it depends on who the players are and the kind of game you're running.
Yeah, and the GM, right?
So, suppose you have a bunch of players and you give them a lot of narrative control, but they are all don't really want it. So then you're going to have to, you may not have prepared as well as you should have if your players don't actually want to tell you what the world is like.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is that you have to have the right group of players to be able to run this, that type of game really well, or have a game like that runs well. Because you're right, there's some players out there who don't really want a lot of narrative control, or even, you know, even that's such a foreign idea that they don't want it. You know, they don't want that kind of responsibility. They want to be entertained. You know, it's like a movie to them. You know, the GM presents a situation and they're perfectly willing to go with whatever the GM says, and they have to deal with that situation without their own influence in the world. And that's kind of cool. I mean, that's cool. I mean, that's the way we've always played. You know, I don't think it's a bad way of playing. I mean, it's like nobody can tell you how to have your fun. You know, what is it? You can't tell the people that you're having bad fun, you know, or whatever. You know, you can't be responsible. You know, you can't tell people that they're having fun the wrong way. And so
that's not the way you're supposed to play it.
Now, people do say weird stuff like that. But, you know, I think I you know, it's a good idea to value different ways of looking at role playing and different ways of being able to role play and have as much leeway for the players as they want.
So as long as the players are having fun and the GM is having fun, you're not doing it wrong.
No, but you know the thing is I think so why would you want to have narrative control in your games? That's a good question. I just asked it myself, so it has to be a good question. So why would you want it? Well, I think it makes it, in a certain sense, there's a heavy lifting of having to describe everything by the GM. Here, the players, you know, can add to the game that are not, that the GM doesn't have to say, right? Or doesn't isn't necessarily responsible to say everything that,
to tell you everything that's happening.
Or describe everything that's happening, right?
So really, most games are probably a mix, right? Unless it's a draconian GM who is kind of running a railroad game and is trying to tell his story versus allowing the players to actually role play.
Okay. Yeah.
I can see that, but like the way that you usually run a game is, and I guess you've taught me how to run games this way too, is you present the scenario to people and then you say, "What are you going to do?" Right. And that gives the players a chance to have all the narrative control they want. So if they look at you with that blank look in their eyes, like, "I have no idea what I'm going to do," then you can give them some suggestions, right? But if they want to take off and go, "Well, I'm going to go to the blacksmith and I'm going to ask him this question," or "I'm going to do this," and then you usually say, "Okay, this is what the scenario is," and then you just look at everybody and go, "What do you do?" And then everybody just looks at each other and then they all start talking at once and tell you what they want to do.
Yeah, well, that's narrative control in a certain sense, but that's just the style of running the game. Like I try to make it not railroady, right? That, you know, that's a bad thing these days, even though we did have a railroad discussion a while ago, and not all railroads are bad, or not all railroady type games are bad. But there has to be some purpose to what's going on in the game to drive the players forward in a certain sense. But narrative control to me is more than that. It's more than just giving them the choice to do anything they want. Let's say I say, "You're in a town, a small town. What are you guys going to do?" "Well, I'm going to go to the blacksmith," you know, and the person, that the player goes, "His name is Ned, and he's an expert in such and such, right? And he talks about, you know, and he has a, he tells me, the GM, who this guy is, what he can do, and, you know, what he's famous for." And so that's kind of more narrative control, because the player's adding to the world that the GM didn't do himself or herself. So that's more narrative controls, when the player is adding to the world that the GM hasn't done.
So then as a player, I'm going to assume that we have been to this town before, since the guy knows the blacksmith and all.
Maybe
that
not.
He can do.
I mean, let's say you go into a brand new town that you've never been to, and that's the narrative control, is that you're able to add to the narrative. You're able to add to the story without, you know, the GM telling you, "Oh, there's the blacksmith's Ned." You just come up with it yourself. Then, and what that does is that, you know, one, the GM doesn't have to come up with a name, doesn't have to come up with a personality, and the player gets what they want, whatever that is. You know, I don't know if he wants to order a nice shield or a nice mastercraft weapon or anything along those lines.
So then the narrative control in the games that we play would be that there's a barrel sitting there, Saul, and there's 20 magical items in it, and all the boys are going to grab all of them, and they're going to have the best day they have had.
No, did you tell them that there was a barrel there with all the kinds of stuff in it?
Or no, one of them would have come up with it all on their own.
Oh, you're right. They could be abusive, right? Especially, you know, if you're talking about things like that. You're in a dungeon. "Oh, I find a barrel with, you know, 100,000 platinum in it." You know, that's
so it's going to depend on the game. If it's a dungeon game, then there's probably not going to be a lot of narrative control.
Right, right.
Other than you say, "You open the chest, what do you find?" And it's bad.
This kind of technique of narrative control is something that players who have been playing a long time want to explore. Or brand new people who have never played a dungeon, have never played a role-playing game. And so I think it's a lot easier thing for new players to pick up if they've never played a traditional role-playing game, or have never played very much role-playing, because they don't have that hang-up of saying, "Oh, can I?" You know, because there's that hang-up, right? There's that, I've been playing for 30 years, you know, I've never played that way. "Oh, that's ridiculous. You know, I'm not going to do that kind of stuff. That's hippie stuff, you know." And a new player's not going to have that years of baggage. And they'll easily pick up, "Oh, this is the way you can, this is things you can do." And so for a newer player, I don't think it's as difficult as somebody as old as me, who has been playing a long time, to come up with this or being able to deal with this situation where players are adding things to the game.
So I hate to say it, but I guess that your session zero would be the time when you were supposed to talk about all of this.
Yeah, because right? Session zero is a good, you know, that's what session zero is for.
So you set the parameters of, okay, so you're going to have narrative control during this game. This is what you can or can't do, right? You can create, and by setting the parameters, I mean, you're telling them that, you know, I'm going to give you this box that you can't change anything in, because if you change anything in there, then there's no story, right?
Right.
But you have your narrative control on all of these other things.
Right.
Yeah, so then people would go home and go, okay, and come up with stuff. Because if you told me that when we started a game, at the very beginning of a game, when I'm expecting the GM to tell me what's going on and what we're doing, and you say, okay, you need to come up with this, I would go,
Well, again, I'm talking about people who really want this kind of a element to their game. You know, I'm not forcing our group to have more narrative control. You know, we were watching a YouTube video about somebody talking about this, and he was saying that if they're perfectly happy playing that kind of game, you know, that's the game that you're playing, and if, like I said, they're perfectly happy, why change it? But he said you could add little things to give the players, you know, give them the you know, it's like a muscle they have to learn how to use, right? So you give them that little bit of a narrative control. A good one, and I've seen this in Critical Role. It's a actual play. I'm sure most of you have heard it. If not, it is a actual play. It's an actual play of D&D. And these people are voice actors, so, you know, they have all these voices, and they're really good at, you know, at changing their voice and playing certain roles. And what he does, and what this person on YouTube said, was when there's a killing blow, right? You know, the monster is gonna die, but with the last spell you threw, with the last hit you did with your javelin or whatever you're using. And what he does is, at least the name is Matt Mercer, he has this phrase that he uses. He says, "How you want to do this?" And that gives that's like the clue to the player saying, "Oh, I get to describe how I did the killing blow," right? So they describe a little bit of what they want to see, and then he interprets that and then gives more detail about the killing blow, right? And so that's what this GM on, or this person on YouTube, was talking about, how you, that's a good way to start adding narrative control to players that are not used to playing it or using it, is that, "Oh, tell me how you killed this this monster," or whatever. And so so that gets their creative juices going, and then they'll describe, you know, and then sometimes they won't say much. They go, "Oh, I hit it with a sword in the head." Okay. And then, so you might give a little bit more elaborate story as a GM as to what that looked like, you know, if you want to gross people out the table or not. Or, you know, but some players might, you know, they might jump on it like, you know, "Yeah, I stand up on top of this barrel and I get a good shot with my crossbow and I aim for his throat and it goes right through his throat and blood spurts," you know, and so he gives this big description, or she gives this big description about what happens, and that's narrative control. They're narrating the events in the game.
So they're not actually adding things to the world that way, but they're actually, you do give them a bit of a narrative control. Saul started doing this when people roll ones at our table, and he allows them to tell everybody, "How did you fail epically?"
Well, because, like, you know, it comes up pretty often in D&D, right? The whole critical hit and the critical fail. Though supposedly ones are not critical fails in D&D.
But at our table, we have lots of them.
It's like a house rule, I guess, that's always existed. But in the rule book, supposedly, it's not in there. Maybe it is, but I don't know. But I've always used it for as long as I can remember. So, but what the problem is that sometimes people roll a lot of ones. And as a GM, you get tired of coming up with things to describe what a critical or a failure is on their part, whether it's dropping a weapon or tripping on something or whatever. You know, as a GM, and as a GM who GMs quite a bit, you know, you get tired of trying to come up with new stuff. That's why it's kind of, you know, that's why I'm talking about it lifts the burden from the GM to describe certain elements of the game. Here you get groupthink, right, to come up with something different. And, you know, they may come up with the same thing you're going to say, but, you know,
but it's usually funnier if the person who rolls the one comes up with it.
Well, there's this podcast called the Secret Cabal Podcast, and one of the guys who runs it, or who was in it, is Jamie, right? And he talks about how how he would, in a lot of instances, he would let the player come up with the failure of, you know, the bad thing that happens to them. And he says, you know, at least this is what he says that a lot of times, I don't know what percentage, but a lot of times, more than 50%, the person, the player who comes up with what happened is like 10 times worse than what he would have thought, you know, what he would have told them. You know, they come up with some really horrific thing that happens, and he just kind of sits back and he kind of thinks, well, I know, I was just going to let him trip. You know, they come up, you know, with, you know, like that famous, you know, table from Iron Crown Industries game, you know, Spell Law, Iron Law, and Claw Law, whatever it was. You know, they have these humongous tables of what happens if you fail. And so, I mean, some weird, you know, like you could literally kill yourself on one of these failure tables, right? But one of the famous ones is when you draw back to shoot an arrow, you know, you tense up and you let go of the string so too quickly or at a bad time, and you chop off your own ear, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's the kind of stuff that his players are coming up with, and he was thinking, he says, well, I was just gonna, you know. Stumble,
our players usually don't come up with that elaborate stuff.
They don't come up with elaborate stuff, right? But, you know, maybe after a little bit of trial and error, or not trial and error, but a little bit of experience, they'll come up with some pretty fantastic failures and or critical hits, death blows. Why is narrative control a good thing? Well, just like I said, it's easier for the GM to not have to describe everything that happens. Sometimes,
I guess that's going to depend on the GM, because I know some of them like to do that.
Well, some of them like the sound of their own voice, yes. And so I'm not one of them. You know, I just, you know, I think it's a lot easier to share the creative, you know, we're creative things, we're creating things, what is it, mutually or in a group. So why not let the players, you know, add to the description? I mean, that's a simple thing that as a GM, you know, you get tired of describing, you know, critical hits.
You get tired of describing.
Well, like everybody does after a while. You know, you gotta, I gotta come up with another a failure. You know, and you're, okay, I've already said you tripped 3 times in a row, and then they dropped their weapon. You know, so players can come up with something weird or something different. Or not different, but, you know, at least the GM doesn't have to come up
so
with
it. So our players like to come up with things like, all you have to say is find a campsite or find somewhere, you know, or tell me where you're gonna stay. And then they'll say, okay, I roll to whatever role they do, nature role.
Survival, yeah, right.
And then they want to describe things, and they'll tell you about all the trees around, because a lot of times, like, Ian, for the longest time, had some kind of thing that he wanted to attach to a tree to sleep in. Or
a
to
hammock
sleep,
or something. He always wanted to sleep in a tree.
And we have another player, Jason, that is playing a cat
Tabasky
person.
Yeah.
And he likes to stay in the trees, too. So anytime you say, describe where you're going to stay, or find a place
there's
to stay, there's
tree
always
nearby.
Trees, and they always describe them, which is, I think, what Saul is talking about, narrative control,
exactly.
Because that's part of their character, so they want to give you that they want to make sure you know that this is there.
Right. They want that element of a tree there so they can, for whatever reason, sleep in it. And, you know,
so it gives people the idea that they are describing the world, right?
They are. They are adding to the, you know, because I don't say, the other way you could do it is, well, we're going to look for a campsite, but we're looking for where there's a good place or where there's trees nearby. Now, I don't say that, and they come up with, well, there's trees nearby for our campsite. So that is narrative control. They're adding to the world without me having to tell them, yeah, that's exactly what happened or what's there.
Because then you would have to, after a while, they'd be going, are there trees, Saul? Are there trees?
Well, that's true, too. I mean, there's a shortcut to that situation. So another thing is, the more control of events and situations, I think the more invested the players are in the game, right? They feel that they're more part of the world if they're able to add things to it.
Well, once you've been playing in a world for a while and you have your character down in your 10th level, then I think you do know that what the world is like,
yes,
right?
True.
So
yes.
So you have a lot more experience adding things to what you want to do. You know what your character can do. And then, I don't know, we were talking about my game, and I told you that I don't know that I use narrative control, or I don't know exactly what that means. And I was telling you that I just put the situation in front of people and let them figure out what they're going to do.
Right.
So I recently ran a game where there were ghosts, and
yes.
I wasn't sure what the ghosts were. I had never played ghosts or had ghosts before. So I had kind of read about it and said, okay, so this is what happens. And I told them what happened. And then I just let them go from there. And I didn't have any idea of how what the outcome would be. So Saul said that I was actually using narrative control because I let everybody describe and figure out what they wanted to do and stuff. And how, and they were really confused, not confused, but it was a conundrum. It was a conundrum trying to figure out how do you get rid of ghosts.
Oh, the players were having that conundrum? Yeah, you're right, because we were attacking them and we were doing like zero damage, right? Because I don't know why. But so that was the situation that was happening. And yeah, and I thought it was pretty neat. I think we came up with some solution of, we actually trapped them somehow in some sort of cage or something, you know, forced cage by the mage or something. And then we talked to them. And then once we realized what was the situation, we solved the situation without having to kill them, right?
It's kind of hard to kill ghosts.
Yeah, I guess since they're already dead, yeah. So I guess that is a form of narrative control. And I think this is a good thing. A lot of people like the idea of telling the story together instead of, you know, being led by the nose in the old style by the GM about the situation. That's, you know, about everything that's going on. You know, people like being able to tell a shared story. And I think if you use a lot of narrative control, that can happen. You know, people who like that kind of game will like that kind of ability to add to the story. I think more narrative control kind of makes the games more less railroady at times, because, you know, the GM doesn't have full control as what the situation or what's going to happen in the world. Sometimes there's that element that it offers up a more of a open world type of game than games without a lot of narrative control. There is a downside if all the players are not on the same page as to, you know, the limits of narrative control. You know, you give narrative control to a little kid, maybe they might find, you know, 1,000 gold piece gems everywhere they see or everywhere they look. And, you know, or they could come up with ridiculous things that as a GM, you're like, okay, that's a little bit too much, or that's a little bit, you know, grandiose or whatever. You got to know your players. And of course, a lot of times because of narrative control, players are really actively using a lot of narrative control. The GM really has to be able to do a lot of improvisation, right? They have to come up with things on the fly or react to things on the fly. And for some GMs, that's pretty difficult. I think the more and more you play, this doesn't really bother you too much, because GMs have to become more improvisational because the players do weird things and they have to deal with that kind of situation.
You know, the players will do weird things anyway.
Yeah, but you know, but you have to deal with that. You know, even if you're not using a lot of narrative control, if players do weird stuff as a GM or unexpected things, the GM has to immediately deal with that situation and then come up with reactions to that kind of behavior or those kind of actions by players. Or they come up with an idea that you had never thought of and like, wow, that's, you gotta come up with something to deal with that situation. So narrative control is a kind of like a new thing. I think a lot of games, newer games, have a little bit more narrative control. Like I said, you know, there's original D&D on one side, and you have Fiasco and A Quiet Year and a bunch of GM-less type games on the other side of the spectrum. And in between, you have games like Feng Shui, you know, who give you the idea that you can add to a scene without the GM explicitly saying that there's a forklift in that warehouse. Or games like Edge of the Empire, where they, you know, they specifically tell you that you got to come up with situations depending on the dice roll, depending on the narrative dice roll, R-O-L-L roll. And then there's games like, you know, Fate, you know, that have even a little bit more narrative control for the players. They are able to describe things and do things in the game that is inherently written into the game. I think it's a good thing. I think it's kind of fun. I think it allows players to explore or, you know, use their improvisational chops and do maybe a little bit of way of doing things. So I think that's it.
So you were going to say that if you were interested in those kind of games, that you should go out and experience them, find someone who's running them and play them.
So yeah, one way of doing it is to go to a convention. There's a lot of conventions here in Northern California, but there might be a convention near you. And if you go there, somebody might be running or facilitating, they call it, a GM-less game like Fiasco and games like those, like that. And It's a good way of trying to figure out if it's a type of element to your role-playing game that you want
to
add.
You can always go to a gaming store, too. I'm sure there will be people there who probably...
Yeah, that's true. If you have a gaming store, sometimes they allow you to play games there and have people do play games at larger game stores. You know, some game stores are really small. There's no space. But I think a lot of, you know, gaming stores, a little bit off topic, but a lot of gaming stores have added gaming space so people can play games there.
It wasn't off topic because you were going to tell them places they could find these games.
Yeah, if you have a game store and they'll have a place for you to play.
So there you go.
So here you go. So this is Gaming's Perspective with Saul
and Jolene.
And you have a good day.
Crazy games we play. Crazy things we say. We fight for control. Whether it's right or wrong, the truth is not enough. The truth is not enough.